Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island, pairing beer and music since 1988. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago, Illinois. Listen critically, enjoy responsibly.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and later in the show, we'll hear what song inspired solo artist, formerly of Chairlift, Caroline Polachek, to pursue a career in music. But first, a classic album dissection of Stankonia by Outkast, originally released on Halloween 2000.
The funky engine that could. Ooh. Yowski, wowski, peasky, weesky. All aboard the Stankonia Express.
Yeah, brilliant record. I think we can all agree on that. A breakthrough record for the duo, and also a groundbreaking record for hip-hop and music in general, pointing the way forward into the 21st century.
For sure.
Antoine Big Boy Patton and Andre Benjamin, otherwise known as Andre 3000. It's hard to imagine that these were just two kids in high school at one point, where they met in the cafeteria doing rap battles in East Point, which is a far suburb of Atlanta, is where they grew up. They were, quote-unquote, discovered by a fledgling production team known as Organized Noise, which went on to make numerous hit records with TLC as well as Outkast, and broke through in 1993 with a track called Player's Ball. They got signed to that L.A. Reid babyface label, La Face, and broke through with that song and followed it up with an album in 1994, Southern Playalistic Cadillac Music.
An album that's hard to say.
It is. But, you know, when we think about hip-hop in early 90s into mid-90s, we're thinking East Coast, West Coast, right? The big, vast area in between was just starting to emerge with their own sounds. We're talking about regional sounds, Miami, Houston, New Orleans, Memphis, and Atlanta.
Hot Atlanta.
Soon to be known as the Dirty South, you know, coming up with a new vibe in hip-hop that I think the Outkast debut really started to codify it. Like, here's something that's different from what's going on the East Coast and West Coast, more rooted in funk, more rooted in sort of a psychedelic, trippy vibe. You started to see that coming out with ATLians in 1996, where that trippiness started to creep into their music. The Quemini in 1998, double platinum record.
I met a gypsy and she hit me to some life game to stimulate and activate the left and right brain. Say, baby boy, your only phone can add your last cut. You focus on the past, your ass will be your hands.
You noticed something about these first three records, Jim?
Little druggy.
A little druggy and all distinct.
Yes.
You know, they weren't staying in one place ever.
The name of our group, Outkast, we don't never want to be categorized. I mean, we stress individualism, and, you know what I'm saying?
All day long.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, the whole non-conformist way of living is like what we did. You have your own flavor. Make your mark in this world as you, like, express your art, because you're only going to be here for a short time until you go to the other place, you know?
By the time they go into the studio in 2000, they've bought their own studio.
Yeah.
Stankonia Studio in Atlanta. These are two men who are in their mid-20s, both around 25, when they're making this record, which in hip-hop years is ancient. You know, fourth album, most people begin to tune out. These guys are at an interesting point, and they also have their personas firmly established. Antoine Patton is Big Boy, and he is the B-boy, and he is the master freestyler. And, you know, Andre 3000, Benjamin, he considers himself the space cowboy, the different wigs, the outlandish stuff. He's the freak, but he's also very thoughtful. You know, I went back to interviews from those first three albums, and he's, you know, Big Boy's a master freestyler, not me. I have to really think long and hard to write when I'm coming up with my raps. But he'd also begun singing more and more on each of those three albums.
True. I mean, they were blowing out the stylistic boundaries, so it goes from that kind of, okay, we get this. They're kind of in this southern vibe. They're tripping on Parliament Funkadelic and Sly and the Family Stone and updating that for the hip-hop era. But by the time we get to Stankonia, they're ready to blow the boundaries wide open. That studio, Jim, you'd mentioned Stankonia, that was formerly Bobby Brown's studio. Mm. They were in that studio recording tracks with TLC earlier in their career. So TLC is this huge group, and here comes Outkast doing some added stuff on the record
the
with
scruffy,
Organized Noise.
Scruffy hip-hop.
Right. So they reinvent this studio as their own thing. That is their place to tinker and experiment. Suddenly, they're free from this notion of, you know, punching the clock at the studio and every hour is adding to your bill that you owe the record company, right? Now they have their own place and they're able to experiment at will. You know, we should talk about this amazing record because almost every song deserves its own show in some ways. There are no two songs alike on this record.
Well, you know, let me say, I agree that the songs deserve a great conversation. This is not a perfect record, right? Some of the classic albums we have dissected are not necessarily perfect. Number one, it's a little too long, 24 tracks. Number two, it's got 7 interludes or skits,
right,
which are completely, you know, when I was like 7, my great uncle Joe got me a reel-to-reel tape recorder. And I had endless hours of fun burping, farting, making all sorts of noise in that tape recorder. And, you know, I've always thought the hip-hop skit is a waste of time. I want to get to the tracks that matter. And these guys are just having too much fun being goofy. And in some cases, inviting friends over and being rather offensive in the skits. I have to program the record minus those 7 interludes.
Right, and there's, what, 15 legit tracks, and they're, like, amazing in terms of their diversity. And you're right, there's
astounding.
You know, you can rank them 1 through 15 and say, okay, here are clearly, you know, a top tier, and then there may be a second tier. But what I loved was the idea that here was a band, you know, everybody thought hip-hop guys were, you know, stylistic. They weren't adventurers particularly. They had a style, and they stuck to that style. Suddenly, you have a band that's like competing with like Revolver by the Beatles. It's that diverse. It's that wild. It's that sprawling. It's their Exile on Main Street, you know, compared to any.
It's their Revolver or Pet Sounds. Let me tell you what I think is happening. There was this incredible moment in the very late 80s and the early 90s in hip hop where the genre realized no boundaries, right? And I'm talking about crews like De La Soul, the Beastie Boys of Paul's Boutique, A Tribe Called Quest, and Gangstar. And then Gangsta is ascendant with N.W.A. In 1991, its second album, you know, sells millions and millions of copies.
Right.
And everybody becomes a gangster. And what's more, artists who are trying to color outside those lines, they're dismissed. Hippies, they're backpackers.
Right,
they're
it's not hip-hop.
Right. And I went back to these interviews, as I said, that Antoine and Andre were doing just before Stankonia and just as it was coming out. They were saying two things. Number one, they're tired of the commerciality musically in too much hip-hop. They're interested in a lot of things. As you said, Sly the Family Stone, Riot going on. Parliament Funkadelic Maggot Brain was heavy on the repeat playlist. You can shake it to the east side. But also lyrically, they kept referencing, both of them in separate interviews, KRS-One. Who called himself an edutainer at the very dawn of hip-hop in New York. Are you really for peace and equality? Or when my car's hooked up, you know you want to follow me. Your laws are minimal, because you won't even think about looking at the real criminal. He thought it was part of hip-hop was to speak out about politics, about social issues, about class, about race.
Right, right. And, you know, the other thing, too, was there was almost an avant-garde approach to the production. They weren't just going traditional. They were right up to the moment, techno, ambient, drum and bass, drawing on all those electronic rhythms. I mean, Aphex Twin was going like, really interesting record, you know?
You know, a critical shorthand for looking at Stankonia is that Outkast discovered rave culture. In those interviews, they are talking about going to raves. They are talking about wanting to up the beats per minute in hip-hop, which had settled into these kind of laid-back cruising grooves, right? Dramatically,
yeah.
To what they heard on the dance floor at raves.
Well, especially when you consider the preceding record, where they were doing a lot of those dub reggae kind of laid-back,
yeah.
You know, let's smoke one and, you know, yeah. Get laid back. Suddenly they were amping it up with this record. So there was this diversity of musical styles that they were investigating. The fact that Andre 3000 was singing as much as rapping on this record, and sometimes merging the two styles on a single song, was hugely important, I thought. Suddenly, it was like hip-hop can do anything. It's not a genre. It is popular music. I mean,
back to where it had been 10 years earlier.
Absolutely. And I think the mainstream was still kind of like thinking, okay, it's over here in this corner.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're starting to realize it could be everything. And that was the vision of this band, I think.
15 central tracks to the album. You know, there is so much musical and lyrical ground covered. I think the best way for us to dig into it is to talk about a couple of songs each, a couple of what we consider the key tracks.
Right.
Why don't you start us off?
Well, you'd mentioned, you know, let's ramp up the beats per minute. B.O.B. ramps up the beats per minute. We're at 155 BPM. You would not hear 155 beats per minute on any hip-hop track up until this day, unless I'm missing one, but I sure as heck did not hear
not in the mainstream
like that. And here it was, released as a single, and a hugely successful single. You know, the one thing that I think about when I listen to this record, I mean, there are some laid-back tracks, it's kind of jittery.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they're almost frantic on this record, breaking them fully out of that Dirty South cliche mode and into something totally different. This song, typical Andre 3000 vibe, typical Outkast vibe, double-edged. You hear bombs over Baghdad. Oh, it's an anti-war song.
Yeah.
Well, it's an anti-war song, but where's the war? And if you start paying attention to the lyrics in this record, you're thinking, oh, it's about what's going on in the ghetto. Bombs over Baghdad, but the bombs over Baghdad are just as applicable to what's going on in the inner city in America right now. Yeah. In Slum National Underground. This was a manifesto, you know, right at the top of the track, telling us where he's heading, where this is located. And then you have that incredible fusion of those synthesizers, those P-Funk guitars. You mentioned Eddie Hazel guitar as a Maggot Brain reference point here. The gospel voices, the rapid fire clapping, the incredibly frantic techno beats underneath what was going on here musically. A huge melange of sounds somehow coalesced into this inescapable hit single. Truly a remarkable piece of music that I think you listen to it 20 years later and it still sounds mind-blowing.
Get The immortal B.O.B. bombs over Baghdad. Outkast had purchased Bobby Brown's old studio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ensconced in that studio, they are Lennon and McCartney, and their George Martin is Mr. DJ.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tight unit. They're working with him as a producer, but really everybody's doing everything.
Yeah. Organized Noise is in there as well. They're old-time partners. You know, it's rare. Hip-hop records, usually it was just a different producer for every track. But I think they were going back to the PE model, you know?
Yeah.
We've got the Bomb Squad over here. They know what they're doing. They're incredibly inventive, too. They're almost like an art entity in themselves. Like, they were so creative. And the same thing with Mr. DJ and the Organized Noise guys. They know what they're doing. They know us. They're incredibly creative. We let them go nuts in the studio.
I think of something like Tomorrow Never Knows and that sound of the backwards the guitar that George Harrison had recorded run through a Leslie speaker, and it sounds like seagulls. Right. I have been wondering what that noise was at the beginning of the next song I'm going to talk about, which is Ms. Jackson, also a single, also a hit. And I finally went down one of those rabbit holes. Bongo drums, but played in reverse.
Right.
Ms. Jackson is a beautiful ballad. It is a strikingly melodic song. Dre's vocal is truly impressive. The reason I made the point that they were both in their mid-20s at this point is that they had had some life under their belts, Greg. There had been relationships. There had been children out of wedlock. There had been ruined relationships. Mm. There had been anger, and there had been love. And Ms. Jackson is a song which I think we wouldn't see the likes of it until a few years later with Kanye West, where he begins to talk heartfully about what his mother meant, what his grandmother meant to him. This is Dre addressing the mother of his child, born out of wedlock, as the fruit of a relationship with Erykah Badu, which did not end well. Now, they had mended fences by the time Stankonia came out, because Erykah Badu makes a cameo appearance on the track Humble Mumble. But there were some tough times in the beginning, and Dre is apologizing to, he came up with Ms. Jackson because it was such a common name in the black community, talking to Erykah Badu's mother and saying, you know, he did her wrong. Never meant to make your daughter cry, you know, but he's gonna man up. He's going to be a dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that relationship didn't work, but he's going to deliver. Apparently, Big Boy had situations like that in his life as well. Erykah Badu herself was not too thrilled when she first heard this song. But there are interviews subsequently done with her mom, who said, A, I should get part of the publishing, and B, I think got a license plate on her car that said Ms. Jackson.
Ms. Jackson, right. So it was okay with her. That's awesome.
My baby is drama, mama. Don't like me. She be doing things like having the boys come from her neighborhood to the studio trying to fight me. She need to get a piece of American pie and take her bite out. That's my house. I disconnect the cable and turn the lights out and let her know her grandchild is a baby and not a paycheck. Private school, daycare, dish, medical bills, I pay that. I love your mom and everything. See, I ain't the only one who lay down. She want to rip you up and start a custody war. My lawyer, stay down. She never got a chance to hear my side of the story. We was divided. She had fish fries and cookouts for my child's birthday. I ain't invited. Despite it, I show her the utmost respect when I fall through. All you do is defend that lady when I call you.
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
Ooh, I am for real.
Never meant to make your daughter cry. I apologize a trillion times.
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
Ooh, I am for real.
Never meant to make your daughter cry. I apologize a trillion times.
Me and your daughter got a special thing going on. You say it's puppy love. We say it's full grown. Hope that we feel this way forever. You can plan a pretty picnic, but you can't predict the weather.
Miss Jackson, 10 times out of 9. Now if I'm lying, fine. The quickest muzzle, throw it on my mouth and I'll decline. King meets queen, then the puppy love thing. Together dream about that crib with the Goodyear swing. On the oak tree, I hope we feel like this forever. Forever, forever, ever, forever, ever. Forever never seems that long until you're grown. And notice that the day-by-day ruler can't be too wrong. Miss Jackson, my intentions were good. I wish I could become a magician to abracadabra all the sadder. Thoughts of me, thoughts of she, thoughts of he. Asking what happened to the feeling that her and me had. I pray so much about it, need some knee pain.
pads. It happened for a reason, one can't be mad. So know this, know that everything's cool. And yes, I will be present on the first day of school and graduation.
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
Ooh, I am for real. Never meant to make your
oh, Miss Jackson, I just love that song.
Miss Jackson's an undeniable classic. And again, one of those songs that cut across lines of genre, demographics, generation. I mean, it was just a huge single. Everybody seemed to know it when it came out.
After a short break, we'll explore a few more tracks from Stankonia and look for its influence on music today. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Be cheating, beating, Indian to the G, they be the same thing. But who you placing the blame on? You keep on singing that same song. Let bygones be bygones. You can go and get the hell on you and your mom.
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.